Oh yeah, I'm killing it, folks. This morning I got up about 10 to 5, got me in a 5-mile hike, came back, did 6 sets of a dozen pull-ups, made some bacon and eggs for my lady's son, and then picked up a couple of dialysis labs right after I stopped by Whole Paycheck and picked up some Lion's Mane coffee for me and my lady for our brains, as well as some magnesium for my producer daughter, who's got a little COVID setback, and then dropping off some homemade salsa to mi madre that my lady made for her, all before my scheduled obligations, picking up the donations. And I found me a bumper sticker for the car, says, "Please be patient, I'm only 9. So as my pursuit for the Halloween spirit is trying to take shape, I was, Monday night after the football game, after the Niners-Vikings, what a game. That was definitely scary. You know what? You can't count out a team like the Vikings. You gotta... not that I have any skin in the game. I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm more interested again in the matchup. But Vikings are always kind of a weird, kind of an anomaly of sorts. You know, they've always had, and what I've always marveled at, they had this kid Addison who ended up with like 2 TDs and like 110 yards receiving, and he's a rookie. And of course, then they also have Justin Jefferson, who he was injured, or not injured, he was on the IR, or he was out that game, but just the history of great receivers with that team, you know, going all the way back to Ahmad Rashad. Like, I don't know if people forget about Ahmad Rashad, but that guy was a great receiver. He's just been an announcer for so long that he's kind of like Chris Collinsworth, who you just accept as some talking head. But these guys were great receivers back in the day, about the same era too. You know, and then you got Randy Moss. I mean, he was huge. He had a huge rookie year with the Vikings. So, but nevertheless, I thought it was interesting that Brock Purdy finally got exposed but he's always been a kind of a downhill quarterback. Everything's kind of, the momentum's always been downhill for him. And he's always played that way, and he's never been punched in the nose. And he got punched in the nose with the Browns the previous week, and then he got punched in the nose again Monday night. And he needs to experience that to see how he's going to react, to see if this is something they're going to build around, because that's a solid team. Those Niners, I mean, Jesus, you got Fred Warner, one of the great linebackers, you got Nick Bosa, and then you go on the offense with Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, and you know, all these Pro Bowlers, and Debo Samuel, who was out as well, but man, those guys are like those guys are the marquee players of the league, and they're all on one team. So, but inevitably you come into a standoff like that with somebody that's got some experience under his belt, like Kirk Cousins, and you never know. Kirk Cousins could, you know, that's the problem with that team, is it's kind of a Jekyll and Hyde situation. You don't know which one you're going to get, because they'll light you up, but they'll also fart and fall. But anyway, but after, so after the game Monday, I'm like, what kind of Halloween movie are we gonna watch? Trying to get my lady, get her kind of in the festive mood of sorts. She's preloaded though. Like she's like a phone. She's like a phone, a free phone that you get in Africa that's preloaded with Facebook, right? Like she's already ready to go when it comes to Halloween and scary horror shit, right? And so, but I caught the tail end of, or the last half, I should say, of Ghostbusters, which is fucking, is that like the tightest movie ever made? Like, that's got a little bit of everything. It's kind of sci-fi, horror, comedy. It's like a real good sustained, there's so much going on in that movie, right? With Rick Moranis, Sigourney Weaver, Bill Murray, classic. I mean, you got Harold Ramis, who directed Caddyshack. He's one of the Ghostbusters. You got Dan Aykroyd, Annie Potts. Just goes on and on. And it still holds up. That was 1984. That was 84. I was 13 years old when that came out. And it's still, even the effects kind of hold up, right? Great, you know, directed by the great Ivan Reitman, R.I.P. But, you know, Ivan Reitman, this is a guy that also directed, like, Meatballs, Stripes, Kindergarten Cop, among others. And, but they were doing kind of a back-to-back little marathon. So the movie that was after that was Ghostbusters 2. So everything after Ghostbusters, the very first one, is in my opinion, a horrendous piece of shit, right? So Ghostbusters 2, and then the all-female Ghostbusters, was just garbage. Like, don't put it in misogynistic terms. It was just it's just garbage. Poor writing. I don't know who wrote that. It came and went. Nobody cared, right? And then this other one that came out, what's the one with, like, the reboot with, what's his name? Paul Rudd? I never saw it. Like, it made such a little splash. Like, it was like throwing a pebble in a pond, right? Like, you barely noticed. Like, it, at least for me, compared to, like, the phenomenon that the first movie was. But I'll say this. The first third of Ghostbusters 2 is very good. Very good. Like, almost, like, the writing is even almost just like a notch, at least for, and I don't know, Bill Murray, I know he improvises a lot of shit. I know he just throws the script away when he gets a movie, but, like, the beginning, I was just dying, like, because the way, and if you haven't seen it, it's not a horrendous piece of shit. It's not great. I think they were just so tempted, or they were promised so much. There was just, like, I don't know, they wanted a sequel so bad that they, you know how that works when it's like they're gonna do a Beetlejuice 2 and that'll probably be crap. But I don't know. The thing of the part was cracking me up though was Bill Murray at the beginning of Ghostbusters 2 was he plays this host of the show, like the psychic network type guy, right? And he's talking to the guy, and he's got two guests, and the one guy, it's a guy and a girl. He's talking to the guy, and the guy's predicting the end of the world, and he says the end of the world is going to be New Year's Eve of that year. He's like, well, I mean, at least from a financial standpoint, wouldn't it be better to just say, like, the end of the world would be, like, you know, 2020 instead of, you know, that year? Like, you could really, you know, ignite the paperback sales of your book, because these guys, he's promoting a book about the end of the world, and he's like, and you know, just really kind of cash in on the whole phenomenon. And the guy was like really adamant, like, no, this is, you know, this is a real thing. And he turns to the woman, and he goes, and so you think the end of the world is when now? And she goes, February 14th of 2006. Because this movie was made in 88, right? And he goes, Valentine's Day. And he looks at the camera. Bummer. and then he stands up and he goes, you know, that's the thing about, he's just going on kind of a rant about aliens. And he's like, you know, and that's the thing about aliens is sometimes you get an interesting one or a nice one, you know, like Starman or E.T. But in the end, it usually just ends up being some kind of big lizard. And then he goes on next week's episode, and he goes, hand me the cat. And he goes, it's a hairless cat. He goes, on next week's episode, hairless pets. Weird. And then until next time. And then he just looks at the camera, and then he just puts his cue card next to his forehead as if he's like telepathically signing off on the episode. It just that alone would have been worth the price of admission. But the rest of the movie just kind of dwindles and whatnot. But yeah, I was reading, there's supposedly like a Beetlejuice 2 in the works. Oh, and oh my god. And so as I'm, you know, sitting on the can in the morning scrolling my news feed, I see Tim Burton is dating Monica Bellucci. Like, what the fuck? This motherfucker, like, he's had a good run, that guy. He's had some, and I don't know a lot about his dating past, nor do I really care, but I know he was married to Helena Bonham Carter, who was in a few of his movies, like Dark Shadows and Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows was decent. And if I'm not mistaken, was he, let's see, who's the girl, the woman, Miss Peregrine? And he did, when he did Miss Peregrine's school for the awkward, school for the ot, for ot, whatever that was a good movie. Miss Peregrine's school for peculiar children or something like that, which was very good. But what was the name, the woman in that movie? He must have had something going with her. And then he had his first girlfriend was Lisa something. She was in Mars Attack. Like, all of his girlfriends are in his movies, right? And they're all stunning, naturally. And they're all very talented and beautiful and exotic and stuff. And now he's with Monica Bellucci, who's, like, in my opinion, like, one of the top 10 of all time. I mean, in her day, I mean, granted, like, I mean, she's, she was, I mean, just stunning back in the day. Well, I say back in the day, we're talking the 90s. She's not that old. But as an Italian woman, like, she's aged like Italian women do. Like, a buddy of mine just got back from Italy. And he was telling me how the women do look. They look, he said, they look a lot like my lady. And which is odd, because I always tell my lady, like, you are Italian. You have to be Italian because you look Italian. Even though she's not Italian. But there's that, I don't know what it is about Italian women. Like, they age so graceful, or just, I don't know if it's, what is it, olive oil? Is it the olive oil? But they just, they seem to age very naturally and not overdone. And I don't know what it is. It's a cultural thing. Who knows? But this motherfucker is with Monica Bellucci now. Like, whoa, you motherfucker. But so yeah, so supposedly he's in the works for Beetlejuice 2. They're bringing Michael Keaton back, who I think is brilliant. I think Michael Keaton's got to be one of the more overlooked guys in cinematic history. Like, I was thinking about him the other day when he was in Night Shift, his first movie with Ron Howard, which is also Ron Howard's first movie. And it was so, he's so fucking good in that movie. It's so funny. Of course, he comes from a stand-up comedy background, but that movie was like his launch point as well. As well as Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner plays frat boy number one in that. Look it up. But there's a one scene in Michael Keaton in Night Shift. He's talking to all these hookers, these prostitutes. And because the premise is him and Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz in Happy Days, work the night shift at a morgue. And they decide that they're going to run. He kind of talks Henry Winkler into running a prostitution ring out of the morgue at night because nobody else is there. Because they've got, and they just use like the morgue limos to escort the women around and so forth. And so the initial meeting to break this to these hookers that are led by, what's her name? Shelley Long from Cheers. She's in that. She plays a hooker. She plays Henry Winkler's neighbor, who is she's a prostitute, but she gets beaten up by her pimp, and he's appalled by this. So he's telling Michael Keaton, and Michael Keaton's like, he's like this idea guy. He's like, I got an idea. I'm an idea man. You know, he's like all day long. He's like, right. He's like recording these ridiculous ideas, like edible garbage, like eat it. It's gone. Eat it. It's out of here. But he's like, you know, we could be their pimps, you know? He's like, cause they, you know, they dress nice and stuff. And so, but nobody's at the morgue at night. Right. Like, this is probably what I'll do if I get hired by Vitalant in the lab for the overnight shift, is I'll probably run a prostitution ring out of the lab, you know, since nobody's there at night. But it's hilarious. And so the initial meeting, when Shelley Long rounds up her fellow prostitutes, he's like, he gets this chalkboard out, and he's like, okay, so what are we talking about here? He goes, I'll spell it out for you if I have to. So he flips the chalkboard over, this big green chalkboard. He writes it up, prostitution. He's like, there it is. We're all big kids. Yeah, I said it, prostitution. Let's break it down. We can know a word better if we break it down. So first part is pros, P-R-O-S. And you guys are all pros, of course. And then middle part is tit, like, you know, one, two, tit, you know, anyway. And then a shun, meaning to shun, to say no, thank you. And well, and he goes, this part doesn't really have any, this shouldn't even be here in this word, but but anyway, so he's coming back to revive his role, evidently, in Beetlejuice, which was a brilliant, like, I was looking up all these strange facts about Beetlejuice that we didn't know, and it is kind of interesting, because the initial take on that movie was like, nobody really understood it. Like, people wanted to option it and buy it, buy the story, but nobody really understood. Like, it was like it's some paranormal kind of thing that spans the living and the dead world. So people couldn't really get Even Michael Keaton didn't quite understand it. But it also talked about how they did improvise a lot. He improvised a lot. But what I thought was kind of wild is who they were initially getting, who they wanted to initially cast in some of these roles. And oddly enough, Tim Burton, his first choice for Beetlejuice, yeah, Sammy Davis Jr. Like, what? Like, that would have been a whole different movie. Well, and then the original script was a lot darker and a lot more, like, I guess, a lot more violent or just really more horror-oriented. But, you know, but Alec Baldwin's in, you know, Alec Baldwin is in? I mean, I don't know if we forget. Alec Baldwin's in that. And he didn't understand it. He thought it was going to ruin their careers. Gina Davis. And what's her name? Winona Ryder, who it came down to between her and Alyssa Milano for that role, and she ended up winning out based on her performance in a movie called Lucas, which I don't, not aware of. Yeah, there's all kinds of little weird nuggets of wisdom of, you know, a dozen or so, like, odd little curiosities about who was originally supposed to be in there, what, you know, instead of playing Harry Belafonte's song, you know, about the coconut song, or the tarantula song, you know, work all night and I drink a rum, daylight come and me wanna go home, you know, the scene where they're at the dining table and they're all possessed and they start singing the song, like, which is a brilliant, God, it's so good, you know. But they had gone through, there was several other songs that they wanted to do but couldn't afford in the budget, and they ended up getting Harry Belafonte's song, and he liked the fact that they wanted to use his original version as opposed to, like, the updated versions or whatnot. So anyway, there's a lot of cool little fact. If you do a little search on Google, you might come across it. But yeah, so Beetlejuice 2. But speaking about the world of Tim Burton, you know, and Bill Murray, I remember reading years ago, and I don't know how substantiated this is, if it's just Bill Murray being Bill Murray, but he was supposedly offered the role of Batman that Michael Keaton ended up getting in the 1989 version with Jack Nicholson. That would have been a different movie. That would have been really weird. But I don't know. All these coulda, woulda, shouldas. But how cool would it be to run a prostitution ring out of your out of a morgue? Like a Night Shift, or out of the blood bank for that matter, Vitalant. Why not? You know, from 11 to 7:30 in the morning, it can be done. We got vans, we got security gates. It's kind of tailor made. It's kind of like a turnkey operation. It's kind of, you know what I mean? But speaking of which, I've been fasting. I've been on a cleanse, more of a cleanse, strictly protein. And here we are during Halloween, we're coming into the Halloween weekend, and I decided no sugar. And I even told my lady, like, let's just try to make it to Friday, no sugar. And it's freaking me out, really, because in conjunction with that, I stopped smoking weed. And so one plays into the other, because when I smoke weed, I get the munchies. And when I get the munchies, boy, I fucking don't hold back, right? So it's like, whatever you got, cookies, you know, peanut butter, caramel corn, Halloween candy. There's, you know, cake in the break room at these Vitalant donor centers. You know, these phlebotomists and nurses are just like, hey, there's cake in there. I'm like, fuck yeah, there is. And, so in an effort to, because as I'm recording, it's Tuesday. I haven't heard back yet from Vitalant in regard to being hired for the lab yet. Not a yes, not a no, not a fuck you. or welcome aboard, or would you like to run a prostitution ring out of our lab at night? None of that. And so, but it inspired me to kind of just do a tolerance break. It's good. You regain an appreciation for what it is that you're taking the break from, whether it be weed, booze, social media, your phone. And people do that. It's good. We're all addicts. You know, we're all addicted to something. So you might as well just every so often it's nice to do like a little reset, right? And that's the idea. That's what I'm trying to achieve here. So, but in conjunction with that, see, while I'm on my tolerance break, I don't get the munchies. So I thought, well, why not combine the two? Since I don't have the cravings at night. Because when I, at night, like, I eat like I'm storing up for the winter. I eat like I'm about to go into hibernation. You know, I look like, I go to bed looking like the snake that swallowed the rabbit, right? So when I wake up, I mean, luckily I'm active enough, but I don't think I'm working out enough to outpace my crap diet. And it's not even that bad. It's just the amount. Like, my system's like, slow down, bro. Like, you know, like, the, you know, like, what's going on? Like, are you, is the apocalypse here? Or what's, you know, my body's like, what are you doing? Like, are you channel swimming? Are you about to swim across the English Channel or something? Or what's going on? Are you carbo loading? Are you going to run like back-to-back-to-back marathons? What's going on? So, but it's been great because, it is good. It is good, but I'm telling you this. See, my freaking brain is like, it's like at warp speed because there's nothing to slow it down and retard it, right? So that's where weed comes in, is to settle me in at night. You know, like dad had a pipe, you know, when he gets home. He had, dad, you want your pipe, dad? Like all that, you know, the old fashioned shit, you know, from the 50s. But my thing was just weed, smoke, enjoy, relax, turn on a game, you know. And but now that I'm not doing that, my brain is like, it's on overtime. It's going. It's just going, 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 going. And so when I, so consequently is I'm not eating as much. There's more room in my stomach. And so I tend to now, excuse me, urinate a lot more because there's nothing, I don't know what it is. It's like, whatever's in my stomach, sitting in my stomach, he's probably sitting there just going, wow, sure is a lot of room these days in there. But what is in there is like an accumulation of all the water and, you know, other hydration efforts that I've made during the day that now I got to pee. Like, there's nothing absorbing that. It's just now it's got to eradicate. It's got to get out of my system now. So I pee a lot more, and my brain is just going off at night. Like, it's all the synapses are just fire. Ding, 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 ding. And I'm having some wild dreams. It is cool. It is like a deliberate kind of derangement of the senses because I broke out of a groove. I highly recommend just breaking out of whatever groove you feel stuck in, like a rut, and just mix it up a little, try something different. And in my case, it's just stop smoking weed for a little bit. No sugar. I wake up, I feel great. I feel like, but it's instant, like instant energy. Like, I could chew through drywall right now. Like, I'm ready. I'm fucking, you know? But it's also kind of limited, like the inflammation and the soreness and stuff. Because when I overeat too, it's like when I was 18, I had a 17, 18, I had my little VW Rabbit, and I'm a dunce, right? Like, I'm stupid when it comes to cars, or I was then. My dad showed me how to change my oil, and I used to change my own oil. But initially I thought, well, instead of just pulling the drain plug, I'll just pour new oil in it, right? I don't have to let out the old oil. I'll just put new oil in it. So I had, you know, in a 6-quart capacity engine, I probably had about 12 quarts. So, like, oil was just bursting through all the gaskets, the seams. Like, my dad couldn't, and my dad was like, what are you doing? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But, so I learned that. But consequently, I mean, that's very comparable to the when you eat too much. It's like you, particularly like stuff that's high in sugars, is you're full, you're bloated, you just feel like all your gaskets are just, your joints are just suffering. So now that I've calmed it down, like I've eased up on the like my Achilles tendon is definitely, the recovery process is sped up. It's much better. I'm almost considering sneaking into the Rio del Lago November 4th, unattached, and just see how far I can go. But I don't know if I will because, you know, like, you want to give it a little time, right? You don't, like, go race the freaking, a Baja race when you just first buy your Toyota Tacoma. You know, you gotta, there's a break, you gotta ease into that shit, right? So as I would gorge and I would overeat, it felt like I just had so much in my system that my joints were just like, please, ease up. Gee, what are you doing? What are you doing, you know? So, it just is what it is. But what else is going on, Johnny boy? Other than that, was it Sunday night? Yeah, Sunday night after work, we did, we made a valiant effort to kickstart our Halloween kind of fervor. And we went out to Dyer Lane. I was talking about that last podcast. This little stretch of road that comes off of Watt Avenue, where Watt dead ends, and it just backs into this nothingness, this rural stretch of nothingness. And we went up there and checked it out. Check it out on YouTube, the Dyer Lane, D-Y-E-R, Dyer Lane. I was telling one of the other nurses, one of the donor centers, about it. And because she's into, like, all that Halloween shit, too. And so we went out there, but it was pissing down rain. It was weird, and kind of the clouds were kind of, they looked borderline kind of like funnel clouds, like kind of on the brink of some nasty, well, and it was raining off and on, but there's also a cemetery. This was the weird part. See, we didn't see anything out of the ordinary on the road itself. There was a couple of other cars. They were kind of lingering, maybe other investigators. Maybe there's doing coke. I don't know. Who knows? But there's, like, garbage, like old couches just thrown on the side of the road, old mattresses, box springs, you know, that kind of stuff. Because nobody uses this road. My lady's like, oh, I could live out here. I'm like, I don't think so. This is like some Devil's Rejects type situation, like, where you don't want to, like, why would you want to live in, like, a house along a road like this where weirdos like us are driving around, right? And they just show up at your door. But they're the one, see, sometimes they see, like, phantom, supposedly. Now, if you watch the video, this video, it's like a set, there's like a 7-minute video kind of summarizes kind of what goes on out there. Supposedly there's like some phantom police car from the 40s that sometimes people see. There's a guy with head trauma walking along the road. I guess supposedly some guy had crashed into a tree out there. And now there's somebody that walks along the road holding his head, like head trauma Harry. But there's also an old cemetery called the Union Cemetery. It's kind of around the corner. So we took a right and we went down and found it. And it's like it's kind of like a, kind of like a stereotypical creepy ass 1800s style headstone, weird, unkempt cemetery. And it's raining, it's dark. I mean, it's the perfect conditions, you know. It's gloomy. It was a dark and stormy night. Best first line of any book ever. A Wrinkle in Time, the Madeline Lingle book. First sentence in that book. It was a dark and stormy night. Best first sentence you could ever have in a book. But this literally was a dark and stormy night. And we pulled up to the gates, and the gates were open. And it was on an incline. So I stopped because I wanted to have my lady... she took a... I think she got a picture, but I wanted to video the thing. And as she was getting ready to do that, some dude out of nowhere, some old codger on a bike in this storm shows up. He's got one of those reflective vests on, so it kind of looks legit. Pulls up. Now, mind you, on a bike. Gets off the bike, goes up to the gate, and shuts the gate. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And we're in the middle of nowhere. Like, where did this old fart come from? So that was weird. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm calling shenanigans on all of it. But it did add a little bit of creepy weird element to it. I enjoyed it. It was fun. And then we got the fuck out. My lady was like, you know, she wanted to roll the windows down and stuff. Rain's coming in. I'm like, all right, you know what? All right, let's just go to a Halloween superstore and buy a slutty nun outfit. So we did. Yeah. So I guess we're going to some party this weekend, I think. I'm going to break out my Pope costume. She's going to be a nasty little nun. And, I don't know. Am I too old for this? I don't think so. I don't know. But it carried on. And that's it. That's all I got. That's it. You know, it's still warm. It's just, I think that's what it is. I think it's the heat that just keeps me from, you know, that storm kind of came, that storm wasn't even expected. I get said like 40% chance of rain. And then come to find out, it's just a deluge, like a deluge of rain, like instant lakes forming. And so it was cool, but it was like a little kind of, a little disconcerting because I don't like driving in that stuff, and like the real extreme stuff. But it came and went. Sunday came and went. Got dark, pissed down, like a cow pissing on a flat rock, and then it rained kind of into the night, but next day, back to the, you know, 70 plus degree. You know, Miami Beach, even out your tan type forecast. I'm like, Jesus Christ. So it ain't easy. It ain't easy trying to build up a freaking enthusiasm for this holiday so far. So. But I'm trying, man. I'm trying. It'll happen. There are nowadays little to no transition between holidays. So next week it'll be like 50 degrees out, right? And it'll be like, it'll seem like Thanksgiving's right around the corner. You know, let's go. Here we are in winter now. Like there's like, we got two seasons, summer, winter, right? It's kind of like Minnesota. It's kind of like, you know, like the Vikings, like in Minnesota, they have two seasons. They've got winter and they got July. And that's it. So, and that's all we got. And that's all I'm giving you. And that's all you get. That's all you That's all you guys get this go around, okay? And I hope you enjoyed it, okay? That's the best I can do on short notice, okay? I'm sorry. Like I tell all the dirty little beggars that come around for their Halloween treats, here. And I just stick a bowl of Band-Aids out there. Help yourself. Don't take more than one, though. I literally did. I used to do that in college. I used to hand out Band-Aids instead of candy. Kids would just look at me weird. Of course, they still look at me weird, but what are you going to do? All right. That's all I got for you. So I'll talk at you later. Arrivederci, baby.